Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. Robbie and Rex Road presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. For homes and businesses that want to stand out, not blend in, visit greenventureslandscaping.com. We'll be joined by Belmont men's basketball coach Casey Alexander coming up later this hour at 7:30. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. We will get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. Looking forward to that. We have the first edition of the season of Weekend Winners coming up later in the show as well, whereby I will try to become a champion again in Pigskin Pick'em and in Weekend Winners.
Did you win Weekend Winners last year too?
I think I might have.
Dang, man. Maybe you need to.
But honestly, I don't remember.
Take it to Vegas. I don't remember either, but seems like there's a lot of free pizza that's been coming your way.
I guess we need to make that happen at some point.
We do.
I guess we do.
I mean, that's my favorite pizza in the city, so not telling anybody where because we're not doing free ads.
No free ads.
It is, I think, the best pizza in the city.
So,
and I've had a lot of them in a lot of places, so I know what I'm talking about.
A pizza expert.
Hot honey. It's who knew?
Good. It's pretty good. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. So, Joe, we had a conversation with Charles Robinson yesterday about the international game coming up in Australia, and you know, my biggest objection to that, beyond the fact that they're going to play a football game in Australia, which is, I believe, after looking at it, a 16-hour flight, and that's for teams on the West Coast to get all the way down there, so that's a long flight. But my biggest problem with this one specifically is it's the Rams and the 49ers. It's a divisional game. And we're basically taking a home game from the Rams in a divisional game between two teams that are pretty good. And like, yeah, you're going to play your home game in Australia, and then we're going to go later in the season, and San Francisco is going to have their home game at their home stadium. Have fun with that. Like, I really do not like that in the NFL. But I guess it is what it is at this point. But, you know, the question we got into with Charles is, like, where is this all going? Like, where is this all going on the international front? Is this going to be a thing where teams every year are going to play international games? Like, are they going to be rotating through like 15 international games a year at some point? And, you know, what he talked about was basically, Joe, that you look at the money the NFL makes in the continental United States and our country specifically. And, like, you have to wonder at some point, have you just basically tapped out on that, right? Like, have you exhausted all of your resources in the continental United States? And look, you know, it's a fair point that Charles brings up from the owner's perspective of, like, you look at the NBA, they've clearly tried to, you know, go global, and you can trace that all the way back to the Dream Team and, like, the impact that team specifically had on basketball globally and all those things. You know, clearly the NBA has made it an effort to go into China. I mean, look, the NHL, to a much smaller degree, they play these international games over in Sweden and Switzerland and all over the place. So, like, sports leagues are trying to do this, but it does sound like the money that they hope to tap into, like, it sounds basically like the NFL is trying to be the English Premier League. Like, they're trying to create these worldwide brands. And, Joe, one of the interesting things that you brought up before that I think is going to be fascinating to monitor here. Like, soccer, people play soccer all around the world, right?
Yep.
People do not necessarily play American football all around the world. No. Now, maybe at some point that changes. I have no idea. But the international part of this, it's not going anywhere. And if you read between the lines from some stuff that Robert Kraft has said, and we talked about with Charles yesterday too, it looks like this is going to become more of a thing overseas rather than less of a thing, which I know some fans around here would like to see it become less of.
Yeah. And so there's just the ridiculous greed aspect of this, which is always part of the story, heads into a little bit different, but like the Bears, you know, they're going to move to Indiana. I mean, it's just, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean,
the Gary Bears.
Yeah, exactly. The Hammond Bears. The Hammond gambling boat Bears, because that's the only thing I know that's in Hammond is they've got a casino boat there. But it's just, to me, it's just unfathomable that you would be this tone deaf and again, like, not, I'm sorry, but like, I was just at at Soldier Field last year, and you can't, you know, you can't really ask for a better place for it. It's the tradition. It is Bears football, whether you like or hate Bears football, and the idea that they're gonna have the Chicago Bears playing in Hammond, Indiana, like, it's just, you know, take away the details, it's just ridiculous greed, and it's all over the league, and these owners need to be held accountable. And of course, they won't even let people do little report cards on them anymore.
That's true.
So that's part of this. Again, if you have a business that is printing money, it's not a crisis if you're not growing at the same rate. At some point, like, it's not going to continue to grow. But they're pushing this. Like you said, they want to be – I mean, I think that's a great, you know, point. That, you know, Charles, so they're, like, they're obsessed with, like, why can't we be like them? But I think the biggest thing that they're just never going to overcome – maybe I could be wrong at some point – but American football – first of all, and I have a little bit of a unique perspective on this as a last year becoming, well, I've been a football parent, but becoming a football and rugby parent.
Yep.
And rugby, by the way, is gaining some momentum in this country. But rugby, if you live in Europe, if you live in Australia, something which is where they're going now. Like when those people look at American football, they're like, well, we play a better version of that. It's called rugby, and it's tougher, and we don't wear helmets. And, you know, I think the biggest thing with American football, we are all conditioned. I mean, obviously, we love American football.
Sure,
we are conditioned to have this. I mean, it's basically simulated warfare. You have a play, and then you have, you know, a period of time. Everybody hulls up, gets ready for the next play, like. For a lot of people around the world, it's like, why are we waiting? Like, these other sports, hockey, it's constant action. Basketball, it's constant action. Yeah, there's whistles and stoppages, but rugby, constant action. Soccer, constant action. You know, as we've talked about, in a football game, in 3 hours, there is 11 minutes of football being played. In 3 hours, there's 11 minutes of actual football being played. We're conditioned for that. So it's like, I have no problem with that. I love the whole pace and rhythm of it. But I think when you are, as a kid, that's just not what you grow up playing. It seems weird. Yeah. I've heard Europeans, you know, talking about this. Like, it's just, I don't understand why people like this sport. Why do you like this sport?
Well, it's like Rory McIlroy, who obviously very accomplished golfer, was talking about this like 2 weeks ago. Somebody asked that, like, it was in the, like, right before the Super Bowl, or maybe right after the Super Bowl, and he was like, you know, I've tried really hard to get into football, and I just can't do it. Like, that's basically what he said. He's just, and it's a lot of what you just talked about, of what they grew up watching. Like, it's just, it's very different. Whereas, like, here, like, I heard that, and I was like, are you crazy? Right. It's football. Like, how could you not get into it?
Right. Yeah, no, right. Like, and it's just, for us, it's like, you know, the traditional sports that we love, you know, football, basketball, baseball, hockey. You know, soccer has gotten big here. I mean, I guess you could flip it around, and I used to feel the same way about soccer. Now, again, I think when you're of a certain age, like when I was a kid, we played Little League baseball, you know, Rocket League football and basketball, and like no one played soccer. That, like, when I was a kid, that got so different. Now, in different parts of the country, that wasn't the case even back then, but it's gotten so different now. Like, all my kids, I was like, the first thing you do is soccer. So that's what it takes, right? But is that going to happen with American football? And especially with the safety stuff. I mean, the bottom line is, I mean, the thing about rugby is, and like I said, man, I had an eye-opening experience as watching my kid play rugby, watching these kids play rugby. But it is safer in some ways. So they just don't, the head's not involved. Now, it's super, super physical and violent still. Got a back surgery coming up, thanks to rugby, but
Sciatica.
Yeah, but I just wonder if, like, because to me the only way you really change those habits and get it to where people are passionate in other places about the, like, some, there will be some, like you said, there's some Irish fans in different countries who get into the Titans and different teams, yep. But like widespread, like they want it, it's got to be like you play this as a little kid. We did that with soccer in this country, but it's easy too, right?
And T-ball.
T-ball.
Yeah. I played T-ball and soccer. I think we're like
But that's our sport. True. T-ball is our – baseball is our sport.
Yeah.
Like soccer is like in my lifetime – huge change in terms of just a normal thing kids do now versus before. Will that happen? Because the only way, if it doesn't happen, and of course I know they're trying to do this, they want to get young people into it, I just have my serious doubts. And again, in Australia, it's like, yeah, we play rugby and we're tougher than you. Watch us play and tell me that your sport's better than ours. I mean, football is obviously a derivative of rugby.
Sure. So. Nah, my response to them would be, I have watched it. It is better than yours. But that's okay.
Well, yeah,
but good luck convincing them of that, right?
Yeah. And I would, as much as I loved the rugby experience last year, I have not gone out and sought out, like, pro rugby leagues to watch, you know? I mean, it's – but I do have a ton of more respect for it and understanding of it after that.
Well, some of this, I mean, just as you said, you're born into it, right? Like, I've been watching football since I was – old enough to watch television
and throwing the ball around.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you go outside, you play catch. So are you gonna need to get kids in these other places in the world to do that? Do they want to go out and play catch? We know kids around the world love going out and shooting hoops.
Sure.
And hey, I get that. That to me is my favorite thing in the world is playing basketball. So, but yeah, can you get it to the point where it's ingrained in them to play the sport of football?
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll take more of your thoughts on the NFL's pursuit of international football dominance. That's coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
I think they're starting to wonder, NFL owners are, how much more can we squeeze out of the U.S. domestic market? Like how much more money can we really get out of television contracts in the U.S.? And, you know, all these other, you know, the ancillary gambling revenue streams and the merchandising and all this. Like, I think they feel like what happens if we get a little toppy and we start to see revenue production or increases in revenue year after year, what if that starts to slow down? Well, we have to go elsewhere to get that money.
You know what? You know what they can do is not be greedy a-holes. Like, this is one of the most destructive mindsets in human existence, is that if it's not growing, then it's a problem. No, dude, you have more money than anyone. Shut up. Sorry, go ahead.
And I don't disagree with that, but you also have a commissioner who, I mean, how many years ago was it that he said, we want to hit $25 billion in annual revenue? At the time, you're like, that is an insane number. Well, guess what? You're getting there now. And even though you dealt with, you know, going through the economic drawback of COVID and the pandemic, you know, they've still gotten back, they've clawed back to that number. That's just not the mindset. I hear what you're saying, and I understand that it frustrates players, it frustrates fans, but that's certainly not the mindset of these owners.
That's Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports with us yesterday. Rex Rudd, very passionate about that issue.
Maybe I should calm down a little bit.
Taking your thoughts on the NFL and playing all these international games. I mean, one thing he also said in there was, you know, you asked him at one point, is there going to be, like, are they going to have teams over there? Like, are you going to start, like, at some point, is, you know, I remember, I don't know, probably 10 years ago at this point, Joe, it was like the thought was, well, Jacksonville one day is just going to be the London Jaguars.
Yep.
Like, and obviously that has not happened. But is there coming a point at any time in the not-so-distant future where you've got, like, a team in London that's a part of the actual schedule, or a team in Spain that's a part of, like, the actual league? And I don't know. We'll see what happens on there. Like, Charles's answer to that yesterday seemed more in line with, you know, rather than, you know, putting teams over there, you're just having all of these games. Like, you're just a constant rotation of games that are coming over there. And I think the phrase he used was, like, creating another team in the aggregate by doing that. So we'll see. Like, I'll be frank with you. I'm not at all interested in adding actual teams over there. I hope that never happens.
I mean, what a logistical nightmare.
It's just a horrific idea.
Yeah. So again, it's just like the bigger picture part of this is, you know, these owners, this league is just so focused on what can we do more, more, more. Well, here's an idea. Maybe you should not want your product to be more and more only for people with a lot of money in a world where everything is expensive, it's out of hand. And maybe you should think about future generations having access to your product. And be happy being incredibly rich and having an incredibly successful product and thinking of the long term of that here in this country, as opposed to worrying about chasing the EPL or whatever lofty, ridiculous goals you have financially. It's like, is anybody going to raise their hand and say, you know, maybe we want to make it so, you know, the reason we have these incredible fan bases is because of generational fandom, and it's because of grandparents bringing their little kids to games and things like that and having these experiences. And sure, everything's on TV now, so it's different, but should we think about the big picture that way and the long-term health of the product, or are we just going to just chase every dollar in every country all over the world? It's really bothersome to me.
Well, also, like, what about your teams? What about your – like, have you seen San Francisco's travel schedule this year? And I wasn't even aware of this until yesterday. I mean, we've talked about the Australia game. They also play in Mexico next year. So this is what's going on with San Francisco next season in 2026. They are going to be estimated to travel more than 38,000 miles. It is going to be the most miles traveled by a team in NFL history. They're crossing more than 54 time zones combined, when you combine it all, which was, I think the record was set last year by the Chargers, 42 time zones and 37,000 plus miles of travel. They're setting a new record this year. But you're going down to Melbourne, which is like almost 16,000 miles away. And then they're also playing in Mexico next year, too. And it's like,
how do you do that?
Like, does your league not ever, like, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm looking around, I'm like, what are you guys trying to do to us? Like, you know, nobody's going to feel sorry for him. I get it. But my goodness, like, that's ridiculous. 38,250 miles is the estimated travel distance that San Francisco is about to embark on this year.
Man, has Kyle Shanahan complained about this?
Not that I've seen, but I bet he does.
I need the San Francisco Niners to be coached by Mick Cronin right now. Can you imagine some of the pressures he would have? That's ridiculous. How could you possibly make a team do both of those things? If you have a team playing in Australia, there's no way that team plays in another international game.
If you're playing in Australia, you should be exempt from playing in an international game for like another 5 years. That's how far away that thing is.
Seriously.
Like Charles said it yesterday, I guess to some degree, I mean, though I don't like any of it, to some degree, I understand like going and playing in London, right? Or going and playing in Germany. Not that those areas are close, but Australia?
Yeah, 5-hour flight.
Yeah, it's a long way down there. Like, I don't think that's going to work.
No. Keith says NFL started European League. Well, they had NFL Europe, the idea was like, this is the minor leagues, but again, it didn't really move the needle over there, you know? And that's a while ago. I mean, really, that came about, in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
Late 90s, I think, early 2000s. You know, they've tried these things. And, again, it's just I don't think without having, you know, this sport embedded in your culture with kids growing up, I think it's really hard to really move the needle. And maybe their data says that all these games are making a huge difference in that regard. People go to them. I'm sure, you know, people seem to enjoy them. I mean, I think they've obviously increased interest. I mean, I think that's clear. But how much? And is it enough to really do some of these things? Someone also asking about a international Super Bowl. That's the thing. Like, I will say, and I don't want it to happen, and I don't think it will happen anytime soon, but it, like, the idea of a Super Bowl somewhere else, like, I guess I almost have less problem with that than in season having teams go, because it's like you have 2 weeks and, you know, you're asking a ton of fans to travel wherever to go to the Super Bowl to follow their team. But we also know that like a huge percentage of Super Bowl seats are occupied by corporate sponsors, right, and stuff too. So it's kind of an antiseptic sort of thing anyway.
I think I'd have less of a problem with the Super Bowl being over there by far than like, hey, especially because it's happened this way a couple times too, where teams are like, okay, they try to, as the NFL, give you a say in when your bye week is going to be if you're going over there. And some teams have tried it both ways, whether it's you have the bye week right after, or I think the Packers a few years ago went and played in Europe, and then they played back the next week in like Green Bay, and it's like, well, that's a great idea. Let's get over to Europe and then come back here and play in Green Bay the next week.
Yeah.
Like, just it just creates a whole bunch of logistical problems. And again, I haven't looked at the schedule, or you know, the schedule's not out yet. One of the things I'm going to be interested to see is like, who are the Rams playing in week two, and who are the Niners playing in week two? Because I might be putting all my chips on those teams.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. No doubt.
Coming back from Australia.
Yeah. Robert Nesio says, are they not building a young fan base in these other countries when they go there? Look, obviously, they're doing things at clinics. Kids come out. Are we getting to the point? But again, if these kids aren't, and they go to school at recess playing catch with a football, or there aren't leagues for them, right,
no,
that are taking them out of soccer, which is absolutely in their blood, or rugby. And again, basketball. I mean, basketball did. Like, I think some of the model is definitely the Dream Team, 92, going over there and look at European basketball and all that. But it's still different, you know. And I think basketball is just a more accessible game in a lot of ways.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Casey Alexander will be with us coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, the game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. Belmont having a heck of a year so far. They got a big one tomorrow against Indiana State. It's homecoming. It's senior night. Game starts at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in Belmont men's basketball coach Casey Alexander to the program. Casey, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm great. Thanks for having me this morning.
Really appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Casey, as I said, it's been a heck of a year for you guys so far. You guys are playing really well. You had a 63-point second half the other day, which is just absurd. So, what do you make of the season you guys have put together to this point? Why have you guys been as consistent and successful as you have been in your mind?
Yeah, a lot of answers to that. You know, we got a great group is the first and foremost answer. I mean, we just got some guys who play complementary basketball with each other, pretty good quality across the lineup and pretty good depth, and pretty good on both ends of the floor. You know, offensively, we've got significant punch, like you just mentioned in that Murray game. But we can also sustain ourselves on the defensive end when we're not playing on all cylinders offensively. So it's just been good. Guys like each other. They show up every day. Those are good formulas for winning.
Yeah, so in that game, Casey, you know, Murray jumps to a big lead. The place is going nuts. And you know, a lot of guys contributed just complete domination in the second half. But Jack Smiley, the freshman point guard, just – I thought he was unbelievable, just in his awareness out there, but also obviously getting buckets, getting guys buckets, playing with fire. I mean, how much growth has he had just here in a few months for you, and what's the trajectory for him?
Yeah, incredible to think that a true freshman point guard is going to take over a game that has probably four or five all-conference players in it, you know, but definitely you see him rise to the occasion. And he's had so many great moments for us second half of the season. We lost our starting point guard, Nick McClain, who is an all-conference player himself, at Christmas break, basically. And so it took us a good while to adjust and try to figure out how to put some backup pieces together. And Jack Smiley and Isaiah West have kind of worn that crown. And Smiley, because of the increased minutes and the increased demand on his production, has really – man, he's just taken off. He's got a great – you asked about trajectory. It's really good. He's a really good player.
So, Casey, we were talking about this earlier this week. You know, home court in college basketball maybe matters more in this sport than any other sport out there. And yet you guys – what is it, 13 games you guys have won on the road? Why have you guys – how have you guys been so good away from home to get those results on a road in a sport where it's really hard to do that?
Man, if we could bottle it up and really had the answer to that, we'd take it with us every season. It's pretty hard to explain, but we do have the most – I think we have the most victories away from home of anybody in the country. And I think what comes with that is just the consistency of our team. You know, I think and kind of the commonality of our team. We haven't been rattled on the road. We've got good leadership. We've got good experience. You know, winning helps you. Winning begets winning, in my opinion. And so you find yourself in tough moments on the road, but you're used to winning and you kind of have that culture and belief. You can find a way to get it done. So it's definitely been very important to our overall success.
So among the, you know, great stories in your team, Casey, Tyler Lundblad, a guy who and actually I was just Kevin Sweeney had a really good story with some stuff on Tyler, and really he reached out to you. I mean, he is, for people who don't know, he is a huge critical piece of your team, you know, the guy you want to get shots for, but he sort of reached out to you, right, and was willing to walk on all that. Tell us real quick just the story of how Lundblad came to be at Belmont and you know, how he has improved so much.
It is a great story, and I would encourage anybody to find that Kevin Sweeney SI.com article that came out yesterday. And then there was also this Rex Road guy that wrote one in The Athletic. That piece was great as well. Yeah, so find that one.
He's mostly a two-bit bracketologist, but true, thanks.
Oh, man. But Tyler Lundblad, SMU and TCU is a walk-on. He earns scholarship at both places, but he never really gets the opportunity to play. He gets his legs cut out from under him. Kind of in the midnight hour at TCU, and he's in the summer of 25, looking for somewhere to go. And Tim Jankovich, his old coach at SMU, who I know personally, you know, just felt like Belmont would be a great fit. He calls me and I say, "Well, Jank, we don't have any scholarships either, man. You know, I mean, we don't need anybody on our roster." And he says, "Well, he can pay. And so what do you have to lose?" And Tyler, I mean, he's a beautiful kid. I mean, he's a 4.0 student. I've never seen anybody more disciplined than he is. You know, so he comes in and it takes a while. You know, he's the new guy in town and he doesn't have any credentials coming with him. But he finds his way into our rotation. Then he finds his way into the starting lineup. And then he finishes off last season as the best 3-point shooter in the country. And this year, more of the same. Like, his percentage isn't as good, but he is I think his next make will be his 100th 3-point make of the season. He's our leading scorer. I'd say he's a player of the year candidate in our league, if not the front runner. So tremendous story. Really, really glad that it worked out for him and for us.
So Casey, I mean, you've talked with us about, you know, the crazy world that is college athletics now so many times before, and just the turnover that happens on a year to year basis. And yet you find yourself seemingly every year, you know, flirting with 25 wins, right? Like you're just right around there every time. You're 24-4 so far this year. How have you and your program been able to do this, to be able to just basically, no matter what's dealt your way from a roster standpoint year by year, to be as consistent as you have been over the long haul now?
Yeah, I give the staff a ton of credit just for sticking to our guns. You know, I mean, we know the formula that makes Belmont successful. It's been in place for a long time. Circumstances around us continue to change and challenge that, you know, but we've never really wavered from who we are, how we want to build a program, or how we want to play the game. And all of those things have kind of helped sustain us, you know, in the midst of just a lot of turmoil. And then beyond that, I think you have to give Belmont, the university itself, you know, a ton of credit, because, you know, they've given us a platform to attract the right kind of people and the right kind of players. And so even if we're dealing with somebody in the portal, you know, they see the benefits of being at Belmont and being in our program. And so in the end, it has worked out. It's increasingly more difficult and it's honestly not a lot of fun some days, you know, but it's a great reward when your time's like now and your team is thriving and you got some real hopes for March.
So I knew you guys would be ready for the Missouri Valley, and you know, you and Murray State are both, you know, right there among the best teams. But here you are, Casey, a share of the league title. You got a chance to get it outright, if my math is correct, here at this next game. Obviously, you guys are gonna, you know, I guess you don't want to count anything until it happens, but you're probably gonna be the number one seed at Arch Madness, which is always an incredible one of the must see tournaments every March. How do you feel about this team? I guess, have you guys through this process become, you know, the hunted, and what about just that opportunity, but also the pressure that comes with it, going into St. Louis with that opportunity, with a team that I think can do damage in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we're pleased with where we are, and we don't want to minimize, you know, what it means to win a regular season championship. Yeah, if we win any of our last three games, we'll win the league outright. And I think back to the late 90s when we made a move from NAIA to Division One, and it was difficult, and we didn't know when or if we'd ever win a championship, you know. And now here we are 30 years later, and a lot of championships and conference changes and everything else. So it's really rewarding, gratifying, you know, for us to be at the top of this league, which is clearly a step above anything that we've ever done before. I don't consider ourselves the hunted. I mean, I still think that we are, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, the underdog and trying to fight for some respect. And so we'll go into March Madness in St. Louis, you know, just still feeling like we have a ton to prove, because we do.
So big picture here, Casey, Charlie Baker, you know, the NCAA is very adamant about expanding the tournament. I think it's inevitable. It's going to happen here at some point soon. I have heard people say, well, this could help the mid-major. You know, a couple, you know, you think about like the St. Louis team a couple years ago, right? Should have been in, didn't get in. I mean, obviously this year, like if Miami, Ohio loses a game, that'll be interesting. Do you think that do you like the idea of expansion? Do you think that if it does happen, that even though we know there's going to be more like mediocre high majors that get in, that there still will be a positive effect for mid-majors?
I don't see how it could be worse. If there's more spots available, you know, conventional wisdom tells me that increases our chances of getting in and having multiple bid league. You know, you look at all the prognostications this year, you know, as we sit here today, and you got the Power Five, which includes the Big East, you know, and beyond that, there's only like two other conferences right now with multiple bids. The Mountain West, you know, with two or three, and the West Coast, which is Gonzaga, with two or three, you know, and maybe not anybody else, you know, which includes some unbelievable conferences, the Atlantic 10, the Missouri Valley, the American, you know. And it's just crazy to think that that's the way of the land as we sit here today. So yeah, more spots seems to be a good option for people like us.
Well, Casey, you're always really kind with your time. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning. Good luck coming up tomorrow against Indiana State, and we will talk to you down the road.
Sounds great, guys. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Casey. Casey Alexander, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, Belmont men's basketball coach. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up next. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Joe, do you have pointy nipples that show through the polo?
Did you know you're my Wonderwall? I'll say my name 1,000 times.
Think this is mating season.
The biggest ass in town.
How far not up his ass are you, Paul?
The lower area is perfectly covered.
We ass, we in. We love, we ass.
It both entertains and disgusts me.
I write by wall, get active, and I'll write by wall, and I'll write, uppercut by wall, I write by wall, and uppercut. He's holding on, he's doing great against us, going to center ice. Yeah, you better believe it, baby.
Joe is such a get off my grass old man.
You know who else doesn't know diddly? Me.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joseph, the floor is yours with that in the background.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Very, very well done. We're going to take it back to – so this was my idea. And, you know, going back to Wes Rucker, as we've talked a lot about on the show today, I had this idea, and I thought it was kind of a good idea, which was, you know what, I'm just going to read – some awesome Wes Rucker tweets, because like he just, I mean, I don't think there's a day, probably a day here or there, but very few days in the decade that I've been here have I not at least noticed a Wes tweet about something. But what I've found here as I come up with this plan, my God, he tweeted a lot. Oh, Wes. What, Wes?
I have the exact number.
Yeah, what is the number?
He tweeted 247,300 some odd times. It just says 247-3K.
So. Okay. So what do you have your number?
My number.
I have no context on this. It sounds huge.
It's a large number. I mean, I have tweeted 94,000 times.
So he's at 247?
He's at 247.
How do you find this out? And I want to see what mine is.
You just get to your profile, and then you scroll down a little bit, and it'll show you at the top. You have tweeted 151,000 times.
That's a lot of tweets, honest with you. So he has 100.
It's not 247,000.
So he has 100,000 more tweets. When did he join Twitter?
Let's see here. Does it still tell us that? Let's see.
This is a great.
He joined in February of 2009.
Okay. So actually, he a couple year head start on me and still. February of 2009 is like, that's
early.
Yeah, you're like early one of Twitter. The first 1,000 people on Twitter. But of course. So, yes, my idea was to go through some West tweets because he has a lot of awesome tweets. But as I go through these, it's like, oh, wow. There's a lot of play-by-play in there. There's a lot of play-by-play. There's a lot of press conference play-by-play. There's also a lot of opinion in there. He's a lot of going off about the NCAA tournament expansion, which is something that Wes and I were in lockstep on. So this was a bad plan because I'm looking through and it's like, yeah, it's a good tweet. That's fine. It's his presence was just always there. I mean, the tweet that gained a lot of interest from the entire, I think, Vols press corps is the post game tweet from Wes.
Yeah,
I have been one of the last people a few times at Neyland Stadium writing a column and getting out of there super late. I have never left there when Wes wasn't there. It has been me and Wes as the last two. Or there may have been one or two other stragglers, but pretty close. I'm pretty sure that Wes always, always, always was the last person out of the press box. And so he would always tweet basically General Nealon's big old house of football.
Yeah, big old damn.
Signing off from General Nealon's big old house of football. So like that's when you kind of knew –
that
the day could end. Yeah. Yes, exactly. I mean, and again, it's just it's beyond the heartbreak personally. It's just purely on the Tennessee sports side of things, purely on the journalism side of things. It is a gigantic loss. I saw this from Austin Stanley. He tweeted this out, and this is Wes was actually speaking yesterday before the car accident that took his life and talking about journalism and about covering these people. And I just thought that this was really, really good. You know, some of the last words Wes Rucker said. So we wanted to play that right now.
There are times where above me, I'm getting a little bit of trouble. Not here, and I'm hoping to move past those phases of my career when I would just be like, you know what, I don't care, the man, I'm coming after you. Now I just kind of say, this is what I think, and if it bothers you, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to bother you, but you know, hey, we say what we think. You do not have to agree with me. I do not make that a requirement at all. But you will always know what I think. You will always know what I think because I am not smart enough to hide it. I'm not, and I don't care to. I think transparency is the only way for us. I think as close to full transparency as you can be. And I've said this many times, and I offer this as a PSA now and then. If we want the people that we cover to be open, accountable, honest, candid, why do we not expect the same of ourselves? That's even if people don't care, and a lot don't, and I don't blame them, don't care what about us or who we are or what we're doing. We're just kind of grist in the mill, and that's fine. That I don't take that personally. You know, if somebody else stepped in and did my job, you'd still follow that person because that's the team that they cover the teams that you want to see. It's not about us. I only do it and I try to emphasize this, I only do it. I don't even care about myself. I don't, really. Even in my, I'm not sure anybody in my own house cares about me at times, if I'm being honest. But, or what I think. They care about my existence, not what I think. But I'm just trying to be the example that you want to set in the world, right? Do not be a hypocrite. My parents did not raise hypocrites. They did not raise hypocrites, and we don't abide by that. We don't allow it. We don't tolerate it.
That was Wes Rucker talking yesterday about covering Tennessee, and man, it's a lot of heavy stuff there. But just he did, and that's exactly it. I mean, I couldn't agree more with what he said, you know. And Wes, and you never ever wondered what Wes thought.
Nope.
And he came about his opinions, you know, honestly, by doing the work, asking the questions, showing up every day, and he was a credit to this profession beyond all the people who loved him personally.
Yep, no doubt about it. Wes Rucker passing away yesterday at the age of 43. Again, appreciate everybody's thoughts that they've shared with us so far throughout the show today. We'll continue to take those on our phone and text lines. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll have Teron Davenport with us coming up next. We will get into all things Titans with him, with his weekly visit. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.